Kyle O'Reilly, one half of the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champions, and one half of the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Champions. You're listening to Condo on the Moon Podcast. Keep it real.
Freak out, we head down that lonely highway that leads to final battle. And I was never in Ring of Honor because it didn't exist when I wrestled. But if I had been there, I would have took over the whole friggin' company. And I would have been the best thing walking, the best thing talking, the best thing ever to set foot in there. And that is the truth. And Chris Walder, I know you will not be wishy-washy like Josh Lopez last week. You will definitely agree with me, and you will confirm this. Is that correct?
Hey, I'm the number one co-host on the planet right here, but I must say, Savage, you are being a little bit cocky.
Okay, what the hell is the deal? Like, Josh didn't put over Randy last week, now you? What's going on?
Oh, man, it's that time of year, man. I'm not full of praise like I used to be.
Christmas is almost here. Like, come on, like, Christmas spirit. What's up with you guys? I'm normally the grumpy old guy. That's my role. I am James Borbath, the grumpy old guy, as I just mentioned. And he is Chris Walder, back healthy and 100%. And living in the afterglow of his Raptors being acknowledged. Well, my Raptors, too. On national television in the United States of America. But it did not go so well for our Raptors.
Yeah, let's not talk about that game, man. I'm still recovering from the whole third quarter blowout, but it is what it is. It's the Toronto Raptors. We're used to it at this point.
Yes, but I was trying desperately to set up a segue because we have a guest today, and he is a Canadian.
Canadian!
Yes, Kyle O'Reilly, one half of Red Dragon, the tag team, not the video game. Oh, no, that was Double Dragon.
That
right?
was Double Dragon.
Yeah. Kyle O'Reilly joins us, and Kyle has been all over the news because him and his tag team partner, Bobby Fish, have been tearing it up in Japan, and they won the recent junior tag team tournament, beating my guys, the Young Bucks. I don't know how that happened. It's just not right. But they did. And then that wasn't good enough. They went on and they won the IWGP Junior Tag Team Championships, once held by those Young Bucks. So they are now the champions of the New Japan promotion as well. So it's been big things, and you know, there's a whole bunch of other things. In fact, when we get to the interview, Chris Walder, Kyle was so impressed by his own accomplishments, which were all true, that I listed at the start of the interview. He was dumbfounded, but it is the truth. Kyle O'Reilly has had one heck of a 2014.
Very humble young man. That's the Canadian in him coming out. But yeah, he's been on a roll lately. Red Dragon killing it right now with all the belts, all the titles, all the victories, even though they're taking out the Young Bucks in the process, which obviously bothers you.
It does. Well, we talk about the match that we were at, which I think you can attest to. That tag team match between the Bucks and Red Dragon in Toronto, that was one hell of a show.
Oh, yeah, it was amazing. It was the first time I've seen both teams live. I mean, in general, it was the first wrestling show I've ever attended, and they main evented, and it was one of the better tag team matches of the year, regardless of the company.
Indeed, and if it wasn't the best, they had another pretty good one that happened in New York City that involved UFC fighter Filthy Tom Lawler, who was in the quarter Red Dragon. We talked to Kyle about that. We talked to him about the match in Toronto. There's actually some funny stories I did not know about the event in Toronto. I knew part of it, but Kyle actually tells me a second part to the story that I did not know, which happened to him and his tag team partner Bobby Fish here in Toronto. it kind of dismays me, the myth of, you know, Canadians being good people. Not exactly.
Oh, is that the... Oh, I don't want to get into it. Are you just going to leave that for the interview?
Yeah, we'll leave it for the interview. But we also get to hear a famous young lady in the world of mixed martial arts made her way to Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. How did the locker room at PWG respond to one Ronda Rousey being in the house? Kyle kind of clues us in on that. And all the stuff he's been up to, from traveling to Japan, back here to America. He's got a match tomorrow in San Antonio against Matt Taven, Michael Bennett. Busy times. It's going to be a long road to Final Battle for Red Dragon. And Kyle is getting geared up for it. And he says he has his chiropractor on speed dial for the next month. So it's going to be tough times. But good for him, because, you know, we like to see our Canadians doing well in wrestling, Chris Walder.
Is this the time of the podcast where I put my hand over my chest and start singing the national anthem?
No. You singing is never a good idea on the podcast.
You don't know that.
I do know that. I do, trust me. I think our listeners do, too. But you can say some nice things about Red Dragon or Kyle O'Reilly, and we can throw to the interview. We could do that.
Hey, I'm just looking forward to the interview in general, so let's start this thing up.
It is our pleasure to be starting the road to Final Battle. Down the road we go, and we start off with a fellow Canadian. He is one half of the tag team Red Dragon, who most recently had a lot of success in Japan for New Japan Pro Wrestling. They won the tag team junior tournament, defeating the Young Bucks in the finals there. And then that wasn't good enough. They won the tag team titles the Young Bucks once held, the Junior Tag Team Championships in New Japan Pro Wrestling, and the IWGP Junior Tag Team Champions. He is also a 2013 Battle of Los Angeles winner. He is the current reigning and defending PWG champion, and he also is like a multi-time ROH Tag Team Champion. If you don't know who I'm talking about by now, it is Kyle O'Reilly on the line with us. Hello, Kyle. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Thanks for having me on the show, man. That was quite an introduction. I appreciate it.
But it's all true. Like that's not ad-lib or hyperbole. That has all happened for you in the last year and a half. I guess we'll start there. Yeah, I guess we'll start there. I had Adam Cole on the show a couple times, and we mentioned what a great year it's been for Adam Cole. I think very few people could argue that they've had as good or better a year than Adam, but you probably could make that case.
It's been a good one, man. I'm a lucky guy for sure.
And, you know, we'll start, I guess. You have had some fantastic matches with your tag team partner, Bobby Fish, with the Young Bucks, who are just an incredible tag team in their own right. How fun is it to get in the ring with those guys? Because I was there in Toronto when you had the 2 out of 3 falls match with the Bucks, and that was unbelievable. I was ringside, and not because I'm talking with you, it's because it's the truth. One of the best tag team matches I've ever seen live in my life.
Oh man, appreciate that. You know, getting in the ring with those guys, it's an adventure every time. Like, they're just so amazing, and they have tremendous matches with a couple of broomsticks, let alone a competent tag team. So going into a match with those guys, you know it's going to be something special. You know it's going to be great. And they always deliver, man. And they're top-notch guys in and out of the ring. So don't have enough good things to say about Matt and Nick Jackson.
Yeah, they're one of my favorites. I can't lie. I mean, all of Mount Rushmore are my favorites from PWG. But that being said, you have also had some success with going to Japan, as we mentioned over the top. Where did all that begin? Was that when ROH and New Japan came together for the co-shows that I was also at in Toronto? I wasn't there in New York, but those two shows, was that the beginning of that working out for you and Bobby going over to Japan?
I think it very well could have been. I think the match in New York City with the Young Bucks could have been what set the wheels in motion for us, obviously, with the New Japan office being there and watching it. I think that could have been where they said, okay, well, we like these guys, let's bring them over, let's take a closer look, you know. So I think that's kind of what got the ball rolling, and then we officially got the call, I guess. Bobby and I were actually in England at the time when we found out we'd be going over for the G1 Climax Finals in the Cebu Dome, and that would end up being our debut. So, you know, it was just, it was surreal, man. Japan, somewhere I've always dreamed of wrestling, and I've always had that goal of getting there. So to say that not only have I wrestled in Japan now, but I'm a champion in Japan, it's pretty special.
And that was an experience that you got to share not only with Bobby, your tag team partner, but your former tag team partner, Adam Cole, was also going over there, and Michael Bennett. And yep. It must have been cool for all you guys to have someone like Bobby, who has a lot of experience going over to Japan, being there with you guys.
Yeah, it was a great crew of people, man. And definitely having Bobby with so much experience, and Noah, I think he's been going there since 2006 pretty regularly, so he's got a ton of experience over there, so that definitely helped my confidence, you know, knowing that he has my back, and you know the ins and outs of being in Japan and how the fans will react to certain things, so it definitely helped.
And you guys as a tag team, there's a real chemistry between the two of you. Like, there's noticeable differences. Obviously Bobby is a guy who, as much as he's a great wrestler, he also loves to talk with the audience and talk some smack, and we'll get into that a little later. But how did that all come together, and was it an instant chemistry for you when you two first got together?
Yeah, it kind of started off as a bit of a random pairing. I think, you know, it was decided we'd be a tag team for, I think, Final Battle 2012, maybe? And that we had our first match against the American Wolves on that show. So it kind of just started out as something random, but we were both instantly behind it, and we both instantly believed in it and started throwing off ideas and coming up with different nuances and things we could do and how we wanted to represent ourselves and what we wanted to be. And we were both completely on the same page. We've been on the same page for a long time. Like, you work with so many guys, they're tag teams, they butt heads or they disagree on where things should be and things of that nature. But Bobby and I, we're always on the same page. We always have the same goal, and it's always for the benefit of the team. There's no one selfish, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and you guys have a very unique style. I don't know how, if you'd class it as like an MMA gimmick, so to speak, but you guys are legitimately into mixed martial arts training and all that sort of thing, so the line is nicely blurred between reality and storyline with your tag team, and I think it works out great.
Sure.
And it's nice to have, you know, some kind of realism in wrestling that, you know, with UFC out there, I think is lacking sometimes in other promotions.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I agree.
Was there ever a time where you considered, like, going that route? Because I know they do the interviews a lot of times with the older wrestlers, and what if the UFC was out there when they were coming up? Did you ever consider, like, going that mixed martial arts route?
I think for me, I didn't really start training full tilt in martial arts until I was already a professional wrestler. So I think, you know, it started out with the dream of being a pro wrestler, and martial arts training was just to supplement myself and my training, and to just kind of bring a different dynamic to my wrestling style. I find since I've trained in kickboxing and jiu-jitsu and things of that nature, that my footwork has increased greatly, my timing has increased, my ideas and my wrestling style. So it's only benefited me from a professional wrestling standpoint. This isn't to say I would never consider fighting, or you know, if I never would have followed that path, who knows? But pro wrestling is my passion and my livelihood and my dream, and you know, that's number one for me.
No, but it is something that, you know, a lot of, not just like wrestling, but a lot of other sports are getting into the mixed martial arts thing. You hear a lot about NFL players training in the off season doing mixed martial arts.
Yeah, and absolutely.
It's just become, I don't know what the right word for it, but for lack of a better term, the cool thing to do now.
Well, I wouldn't say just being out of because it's a cool thing to do, but the benefits that you get from training in martial arts just outweigh any sort of other sort of training you could do. Like, you know, there's being in shape, and then there's being in jiu-jitsu shape, and when you can roll on the mats for an hour straight, then you can take on any sort of wrestling match. I can never get as tired as I would, you know, grappling on the mat. So I find there's so many different benefits, whether in any sport, that correlates to the cardio that you get from training in martial arts. It just helps in every single possible area.
Yeah, and one of the things I didn't know about you when I was doing some research for this interview, you have type 1 diabetes. What are the challenges with that, with wrestling and having to go through with that?
It makes, you know, life on the road difficult at times. You know, you never know where your next meal is going to be or if it can be something healthy or whatever, but, you know, I've dealt with it most of my life. It's second nature to me now. But yeah, there's definitely its challenges. You know, you always have that in the back of your mind. You don't want anything to happen while I'm wrestling, or, you know, to go into a coma or some shit. You never really know what life's going to throw at you. But I feel I'm quite prepared, and I take pretty good care of myself. And it's just something I've had to deal with.
Yeah, and it, you know, it's an inspiration, I think, for other people that you can get out and do stuff and not let it hold you back.
Sure, yeah. Thanks, man. I appreciate that. It's definitely a disease that you can control, let alone have it control you.
Yeah, and to have role models is always good, and it never hurts. Going back way back in time, you were tagged with Adam Cole, as we talked about earlier on, and you and Adam had a match, actually, with the Young Bucks again, and that's how you made your way to PWG, as I've been told by Adam. Maybe your take on how that all came together, where you guys got to mix it up with the Young Bucks and then found your way heading out to California.
Yeah, I think we had a match in New York with the Bucks, and they were fresh off of being in TNA or were on their way out or something. And, you know, we tore it up with them, and they're definitely instrumental in who PWG uses, and they were stoked on us, so that definitely helped. I guess they definitely helped get our foot in the door there. So our first match in at Gorilla was with the Young Bucks, and I ended up tearing it up with them and getting a full-time roster spot. So, yeah, it all worked out.
Yeah, and everyone that I've ever talked to or heard do interviews that is part of PWG, it's just such a special place, and everyone just seems to be having just the best time of their lives. It's really, I think I said it to Adam, I almost feel like it's a Disneyland for wrestling fans, for lack of a better term.
That's a great analogy. It totally is, man. It's a fun atmosphere, and everyone's there to work hard, and it's just, there's not a ton of pressure. You can go and you can still have fun, you can still have a great match, and the fans are always super generous, so it's a fun place to be. You ever made your way out there for a show?
No, I haven't made it out there. If I hit the lottery, I'll be there.
All right.
But yeah, it comes off the screen, that whole environment and that whole atmosphere there, and it's really great to see. And to be honest, Joey Ryan spent so much time at Disneyland, that's how I came up with the analogy.
Nice. Yeah. Perfect.
So out there, you had the chance to compete for the title that you now hold, and had to be special to be wrestling Adam for it, I would imagine.
Oh, totally, man. Very special. You know, he's as much as we are rivals inside the ring, you know, he's one of my best friends outside of the ring, so getting to share that moment, it was, you know, it was a good couple of years of cumulative hard work at PWG, just trying to do my best there and have the best matches I can possibly have, and, you know, I was rewarded with the title run, so I'm grateful for that, man. It's just, it's one of those places where you can go, and just being there makes me a better performer. It's where I can work on my working my new material, so to speak, and see what works and see what doesn't work. I feel like the last year and a half of singles matches there and the run I've been having has just made me a better performer by leaps and bounds. So I'm lucky, man. I'm very lucky I get to go out there.
And how is that to switch and transition from tag team to singles? Because I know I actually got to see you wrestle singles as well where I'm from, Hamilton, Ontario. You were at a A1 show and you're wrestling with Kevin Steen in a four-way match. And obviously I'd seen you wrestle singles out in PWG as well. But how is that transition like to go from like tag team to singles?
It's nice to... you know, get experience on the whole spectrum. Like in ROH, I'm, for lack of a better term, I'm in a heel tag team. Whereas in Gorilla, I'm more of a singles babyface wrestler. So, like I said before, it's, you know, it's where I can work on those things, and it's where I can be different. That being said, man, I love being in a tag team, specifically with Bobby. We just have so much freaking fun. Just super proud of this tear we're going on right now, and just having awesome matches, and just having a great time, so I'm super thankful for that. And honestly, I prefer tagging with Bobby over a singles match any day. A lot easier.
Yeah,
easier on the old bod.
And too, the fact that, you know, tag team wrestling on the upper tier, like WWE and all that, it doesn't always get the love that it probably deserves. But on the independents right now, there's so many good tag teams. I mean, there's you and Bobby, there's the Young Bucks, you had we're going to talk about Final Battle, which is on pay-per-view. The first pay-per-view, you guys got to face the Addiction, formerly Bad Influence from another place. You know, mm-hmm. There's just so many good teams out there, and it's really fun to see, because tag team wrestling, like, I'm older, so when I grew up, they had like the British Bulldogs and like the Killer Bees, and there was just a list of tag teams, and it was just a massive thing, and it just kind of has died off. And it's nice to see the art form of tag team wrestling becoming relevant again, to the point you guys in that Toronto show that I was at, you and the Bucks, you guys were the main event in that show.
Yeah, it's true, man. Like, I grew up loving tag team wrestling, so the fact that I'm part of a notable and prominent tag team, it's just it's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, and it's you guys seem to have a lot of fun with it too. And one of the things that you guys started doing, and it seemed a natural fit for Bobby right away. For you, I wasn't sure, but when I saw the first one, I was like, wow, you know, I didn't see that coming from Kyle. But the whole fish tank thing, how did that start?
Right. You know, I'm not sure exactly how it started. I know the first one we did was a cheeseburger, and pretty much everything we've done fish tank related has just been ad lib. Like, a lot of Bobby and my interviews have more or less us just trying to pop each other and make each other laugh, and it ended up just being like kind of weird, goofy, silly stuff. But I don't know, a lot of people, it's gotten a positive reaction. So, you know, even though we might think it's so stupid, as long as people are liking it and watching it, who are we to say what's right or wrong? So, yeah, it's fun. It's definitely taken me out of my element, man. And the whole teaming with Bobby thing has just helped me get out of my shell and find a personality and find a character and find a direction. So, super thankful for that and excited to see how it's moving forward.
And keeping in that vein with Bobby and his talking and all that, Bobby is known for getting into verbal discussions with fans. I just wonder, is there a specific line or event that you can remember of Bobby getting into it with somebody that just, like, made you have to, like, collect yourself? Because he says some funny things.
Oh, man, I think it might have been that Toronto show that you keep referring to, but I think it was after the match. I'm not sure if Bobby was mouthing someone off or what. He might have been. But I saw someone, like, throw a chair in his direction. Suddenly I hop up and start going at it with this fan, and it almost turned into a physical confrontation. Sometimes you just got to take a moment and breathe and relax, like, okay, it's just chill, you know, calm down, I don't want to get in trouble here, whatever. But then I find out Bobby shoved him first, so of course it ended up just being something that he thought. But his ability to connect with the crowd is unreal, man, and he really knows how to egg them on and get people talking. For better or for worse, I'm all on board, so it's great.
And he tweeted, too, he lost his ring jacket at that show, too.
Oh, we both did. And then someone messages me on Twitter saying that they bought it off of someone selling it in a flea market for $90, and if I could sign it. I was like, are you freaking kidding? I spent so much money on that jacket. Someone jacked it, and now they sold it at a flea market? Oh, we were furious.
That is ballsy. Like, you have stolen merchandise in your possession. Hey, can I get an autograph? That's...
I know. I don't think the guy knew that it was stolen. He was just asking me to sign it. I think he thought that I sold it or whatever. And I was like, where did you get that? And he's like, oh, I bought it off someone at a flea market. And I said,
You see, if it was a Young Bucks jacket, I would believe that.
There you go.
There we go. But let's get into the road for you guys heading into Final Battle. It is ROH's second time on pay-per-view. You've got a lot of challenges ahead to get there just before we even get to December 7th. Starting this Saturday, you're getting in there with two members of the Kingdom, Michael Bennett and Matt Taven, the newest member of the Kingdom. Those two guys tagging up, haven't seen that much in ROH, but those two guys on the independents have been friends, enemies, the whole nine yards. So they know each other well, so that should be a fun match to see and a new one for you guys to experience.
Absolutely. San Antonio is always a tremendous crowd. It's glory by honor. So, you know, it's for the ROH Tag Team titles. It's going to be a war, man. And, you know, Bennett and Taven, they're getting ready for a tour of New Japan as well, the Global Tag League. So this will be a little warm-up for them, get them ready for those Japanese fighters.
Yeah, and you know... If you get by that, which we assume you will, then we have a couple weeks later, there's a tag team tournament for the right to face you guys in a four-way match, and I don't know. You want to handicap the field with me? Because I got the card in front of me. You can pick who you think you can beat or who you actually think will win. I don't care. Either one works for me. So we got Jay Lethal and Jay Diesel with Truth Martini against the Briscoe Brothers. I would think the Briscoe Brothers are taking that, even though Jay Lethal is the television champion. He's a fellow Randy Savage.
Briscoe's just got all that experience, you know. They got years and years tagging together, so it's tough to beat that. We should know. We beat them.
There you go. So there you go. The Briscoes, he's throwing down the challenge right here. And Jay Lethal, though. Best Macho Man Savage next to me in the world. That said, the next matchup, The Addiction, who you guys faced the last time on live pay-per-view at Best in the World, Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian, they take on The Decade, BJ Whitmer, and Jimmy Jacobs. I like The Addiction in this one. How about you?
Yeah, you got to go with The Addiction too, man.
Yeah.
Guys with Daniels, they're just... two ring generals who just always bring the thunder. So I know they're hungry for the gold. I can't put it past them. They'll be going on for sure.
Yeah, and Christopher Daniels, I mean, it's amazing what he can do when you consider the date that's on his birth certificate. He still moves around like he's half his age.
And like a fine wine, aged to perfection.
Indeed, and then we've talked about them a lot already, the Young Bucks, you know them as Nick and Matt Jackson, taking on a new team for ROH with Matt Sydal, who just came into the company, and he's pairing up with ACH, which I don't think they're going to beat the Young Bucks, but boy oh boy, they are going to be flying around with those two, and then you add the Young Bucks into that match is going to be scary good, I would imagine.
That should be a great match. Yeah, I didn't know that ACH and Sydal were teaming up. It sounds like a good team, man.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, they should maybe stick together and stick that out because that would be a high flying team to watch for sure. So
absolutely.
That said, I think we're still taking the Young Bucks, right?
You got to go with the Young Bucks. They're bringing that super kick party.
And then. Of course, you guys get into the mix, and it'll be a four-way match. And then after that, if you get through all that, then it's off to Final Battle. And you face the team that you beat in New Japan, the Time Splitters, for your ROH Tag Team Championships, not the ones you won in Japan. And that should be a fun match there. Those guys were on the New Japan shows as well back in May in Toronto and in New York. And fun yep. tag team, Alex Shelley, most people are familiar with here in North America, and his partner is top-notch as well.
Oh, absolutely. They're a tremendous tag team, man. We fought them twice now over in New Japan. They won the first fight. We won the second. So New York will be the rubber match for the ROH Tag Team titles live on pay-per-view from New York City, Time Splitters and Red Dragon. It's going to be an all-out war, man, especially with those New York fans. They're just going to be going crazy. It's going to be wicked, man. Don't miss it.
Yeah, and a couple things before we let you go. That New Japan show that you did, you also had some help in your corner with Filthy Tom Lawler as your manager.
That's right.
That was a lot of fun, because I was familiar with him before he ended up with you guys. He is a huge wrestling fan, like huge,
yeah.
And he just seemed to love to be in there with you guys and being able to take a role and be a part of your match. And what was that experience like for you?
Oh, it was awesome. He's a great dude, and just talk about a natural, man. He jumped right in there and just had that instant charisma and just his ring awareness, and he was everywhere he needed to be. And talk about a guy who, has a career in pro wrestling if he ever wants it. So, definitely, hopefully we'll get the chance to be working with Filthy Tom again in the future, man. He brought so much to our team, and, you know, we need that third member.
Yeah, because he there was rumors he was willing to do it again, and unfortunately he wasn't able to.
Yeah, that might have been a UFC conflict with UFC and Ring of Honor's pay-per-view, and you know how things are.
Yeah.
So it might just be a contractual obligation.
Something like that. But, Dana White has to accept that some of his fighters actually like wrestling. I'm just going to nip back to PWG for a second. A famous girl named Ronda Rousey was in the house at PWG. What was that like?
Oh, that was cool, man. It was, she, you know, as soon as she was there, all the guys in the back were like, oh my god, Ronda Rousey, oh my god, Ronda Rousey. So it just kind of made everybody like, I just want to deliver that much more. Not that we don't take all of our matches seriously at Gorilla, but it was just cool to have that element. She was in the crowd. Unfortunately, I believe she left in intermission. She had to train in the morning, which goes to show what a competitor she is. But it was cool. Hopefully she'll be back. And Jessamyn Duke and Shayna Baszler stayed the whole show, and they were awesome as well. So, it's just cool that the boundaries between fighting and pro wrestling are kind of coming down. And, it's okay to be a fan of both.
Yeah, and I think they've been a big part of that. Like, the Four Horsewomen, I mean, they were also at SummerSlam, and they were all over that. And it's like, it's great to see, like people being legitimate fans of wrestling and showing their support. And there was a time, not that long ago, really, where MMA fans and wrestling fans didn't mix all that well. They didn't like each other very much. And I think Ronda Rousey and a lot of other people, the stuff you guys are doing with Red Dragon, those boundaries are coming down, and I think the opposite ends of the spectrum are far less now, and the middle is very big.
Totally, man. 100%.
And then, last thing, before I let you go, second time for ROH on pay-per-view live. The first time on pay-per-view, we mentioned you guys got in there with the Addiction. It was their first time in Ring of Honor. Christopher Daniels coming back after a long absence, and first time for Frankie Kazarian. You guys had a hell of a match with those guys. What was it like to get out there for the first time live on pay-per-view? I had talked to a bunch of guys heading into that show, and there was a lot of excitement, and you could just feel it, not just with the wrestlers, but throughout the entire company. And now to be going back, is that whole feeling coming back for everybody?
Yeah, I think so. It was something surreal. It was just such a great atmosphere. Here we are, Ring of Honor, the little company that could, live on pay-per-view. Every single person in that locker room just believes in the product and believes what we bring to the table, and just proud to be there, It was a long journey to get there, but, here we are coming up on our second pay-per-view. I expect much of the same. I expect it's going to be a tremendous card. It's going to be an amazing crowd. It's just going to be a special night overall. And how could it not? You know, you got the hardest working locker room in wrestling, all striving to put on the best show we possibly can. So, guaranteed, final battle is going to be off the hook.
Yeah, and it's something that Adam has impressed upon me in the couple times I've talked with him. It really is a team atmosphere. You really get that sense. I mean, when I was at the Toronto show, All-Star Extravaganza, I noticed, like, I looked off to my right, and there was a bunch of you guys up in, like, the cordoned off stands where people weren't sitting, and a whole bunch of the rosters out there watching the matches and totally engaged and invested in what everyone else is doing. And, you know, that's just so nice to see.
Yeah, it's a brotherhood, man.
Indeed. And, you know, it was great having you on, and I appreciated this. And, you know, hopefully we'll have you back again, because we like to support our fellow Canadians. And
Yes, sir. Indeed.
You know, you got to represent Canada strong and all that. I guess one last thing, because there really seems to be an influx now of our Maple Leaf Canadian wrestlers again, because there seemed to be a little bit of a dry period, kind of like Edge had his problems and left the WWE, Christian was banged up, and there really wasn't that next wave of people on that level coming up. Now, Kevin Steen's in developmental, some guy named El Generico, I know he went to go help orphans, but some guy that resembles him is in NXT, and there's lots of guys like yourself on the independents doing good things. It's nice to see, as a Canadian, kind of a new generation coming. Like, no offense to all those old guys, I like a lot of them, but, you know, it's nice to see a younger generation coming up and having success and being successful.
Absolutely, man. It's good to be part of it.
And with that said, we wish you luck in all that stuff that you have to do to get to Final Battle, because that, in and of itself, after all the stuff
you've
done,
rough.
Yeah, it's a rough road.
Rough week, man.
And all of this,
my chiropractor on call, please.
And all of this after being in Japan. I mean, this is tough sledding. We wish you luck. And
but it's the life we chose, man, and wouldn't have it any other way. So, glad to be doing it.
And pass our luck on to Bobby Fish as well, because he is oh so entertaining. He now has picked up the mantle from Kevin Steen as the number one fan smack talker in ROH. He has
awesome.
That mantle to hold now, so hold it proud.
I'll tell him, man. Will do.
All
Thanks
right.
for having me on the show, boss.
Great. It was great talking with you, Kyle, and all the best.
This is former Ring of Honor World Champion Adam Cole, baby, and you're listening to Condo on the Moon podcast.
There we go. That was Kyle O'Reilly, and as you heard, did a nice little liner for the show as well. So now we've got Adam Cole, we've got Kyle O'Reilly, who once upon a time used to be tag team partners. They are the liners for our show, the ever-building list of liners we're getting for our show, because I actually came up with the idea halfway through when we started getting interviews. Oh, you know, it'd be a good idea to have guys do that. That might not be a bad idea, so now we're doing that.
Think smart, James. Think smart.
Anyway, let's finish up our talk with Ring of Honor and New Japan and all of that, seeing as we had the interview with Kyle. Obviously, big news for New Japan Pro Wrestling. They have arguably the best ring announcer in the history of the world that is living. Jim Ross is going to be doing their live debut on pay-per-view, which will be January 4th. Almost a month after Ring of Honor's final battle. And, you know, it's hard to beat JR. I mean, he is the standard for broadcasting wrestling in North America.
I'm sure Jeff Jarrett's probably going to take all of the credit for that move, right? Because it's a global force wrestling event as well.
Yeah, what is Global Force Wrestling now? I'm starting to wonder. Is it like a boxing promotion and they're never actually going to have a roster? Is that what it is?
I have no idea. Maybe they just signed the contract so they could have the name Global Force Wrestling affiliated with all things New Japan.
Like, is it like Golden Boy Productions now? Is that basically what it is? I'm you laugh, but I'm being serious. Like, is this a wrestling company or is it a promotion company? I really don't know.
I have no idea what it is either, man. Like, they don't even have actual wrestlers in the promotion yet.
They don't have a roster, they don't have wrestlers, but somehow they're affiliated with a pay-per-view, and, you know, and that obviously complicated things with the use of Ring of Honor talent being on their show, because now Global Force is involved with this. If it was New Japan, it's different. ROH and New Japan have a very, you know, good working relationship, but now Jeff Jarrett's involved, and, you know, it seems everything's going all right, because obviously Michael Bennett and Matt Taven are off to do a tour of Japan and are going to miss Final Battle, unfortunately, but that partnership with New Japan and ROH seems to be fine, but it really complicated things with this show at the start of the year, but it looks like everything's going to be okay. You were telling me some of the matches before we got started today. This card looks pretty good, and Jim Ross on commentary, I mean, I think a lot of people are going to be at least interested of the hardcore wrestling fans that are inclined to check this out.
Yeah, Jim Ross is going to have a field day with some of these matches, man. Actually, it was just announced recently that Kyle O'Reilly is going to be on the card. He's going to defend his tag team championship as a part of Red Dragon in a fatal four-way match against your boys, actually. The Young Bucks are going to be involved, as well as the Forever Hooligans and the Time Splitters.
Yeah, that's a jam-packed lineup, and that'll be another match with the Time Splitters and Red Dragon. They're having the rubber match at Final Battle for the ROH Tag Team Championships, so they'll be going at it again. And boy, oh boy, Alex Shelley, like, he's really done well in that tag team over in Japan. He really looks good in the times I got to see him in May and recently. He's looking like he's on top of his game.
He just seems happier, like in a post TNA world. He's thriving in New Japan. The Time Splitters are awesome, and I never thought he could succeed without the whole Motor City Machine Guns Chris Sabin vibe, but he's doing a hell of a job, and I can't wait to see the match at Wrestle Kingdom and of course for ROH as well.
And there hasn't been a great desire for him to get back with Sabin. It's not to say the guys aren't still friends. I'm sure they are. But, you know, there hasn't been that rush to go back to what worked in TNA. And, you know, good for him. I mean, he's doing good. And New Japan is obviously a growing, thriving business here in North America to some extent. I know people are really excited about Lucha Underground as well. I like it. It's different and all of that, but I think, you know, from a star standpoint and from a talent standpoint, it's still pretty much New Japan. If they were to get a foothold here in North America, they have a much deeper talent roster.
It's entertaining and it's unique. I'll give it that. I don't think it has the legs to ever become any bigger than it is right now, unless they sign some sort of a really big name. And of course, you know, Alberto Del Rio is apparently going to go there early next year. That might make a difference. Not really.
Yeah, he's going to be... The next tapings are supposed to take place the beginning of January for what will be classed as Season 2. I don't know what a season is anymore, Chris Walder, because I'm a big fan of The Newsroom, and that show claims it has three seasons. We had 9 episodes in Season 1, 8 in Season 2, or no, it was 10 in Season 1, 9 in Season 2, and Aaron Sorkin was promised, I don't know, crack cocaine. Oh no, he doesn't do that anymore. He was promised something to come back for Season 3 and do a whole whopping 6 episodes. Gee, thanks, Aaron Sorkin. We really appreciate it that you tie up the loose ends of the show that you started.
Does that mean you're going to go out and see Dumb and Dumber 2?
No, I'm not. I like Jeff Daniels in The Newsroom. I am not privy to watching a movie that was barely funny 10 years ago and that they're going to redo again. Hey, you know what? You and Josh Lopez someday, if I'm ever sick, you two guys do a show. Because he was off to see that movie today, and I said if you were going to waste your money, you could have just given it to me. So the same offer applies to you, Chris Walder. I mean,
no, here's the thing. I'm not going to go see Dumb and Dumber 2, if only because I love to Dumb and Dumber so much that I don't want this movie. Sequels and comedies are never usually that good. So I don't want it to ruin the memories I have of the original.
Yeah, it's true. Sequels don't always work as well in movies. Wrestling, that's a different matter. A lot of times they do much better second time around.
For example?
I just think once guys develop chemistry with each other, matches can get better over the series of time. Like, take one most famous example would be The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin. I think when you look at their 15 match, yeah, it was good. 17, a lot better. And the final one, 19, I thought was really good. There's kind of a progression if the guys get to know each other and build some chemistry.
Well, was that progression or was that just two guys just evolving over the years? Because the time frame between all three matches was pretty significant. Of course they're going to improve.
Well, this movie we were just talking about, it's over a decade, right?
Yeah, but they're a lot older, too.
Yeah, well, my point is, over time, in wrestling, if you go with the same gimmick, it gets better, with movies, not so much.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Like, are you dying to see Rocky IX anytime soon?
Hey, I'm a Rocky fan, so maybe I would. You don't know.
Okay.
I would rather see Rocky IX if Balboa's coming down to the ring with like a wheelchair or whatever, because his legs are so brittle at this age. How old is Stallone at this point?
He's got to be pushing up on 70.
He's a robot. He's just working on bolts and
wires. Do you want me to
now.
Google search it as we talk? Or,
sure, go ahead.
All right, I will do that, because a lot of shows do that. You know, they just Google search on the fly. We do want to talk about another older gentleman who I do know his age. He is 69 years old. He is Vincent Kennedy McMahon. And boy, oh boy, he was over in England, and he was not too happy with our English fans. And English people make up the second most amount of people that read and listen to the Dino Nation blog. Or Dino Nation blog? I had a flashback.
What?
Condo on the Moon. We were talking Raptors off the start. Condo on the Moon, sorry people, but English people make up the second largest portion of our audience, so we do not endorse Vince McMahon ripping into the English fans like he did. I don't think we are behind that, are we, Chris Walder?
Well, they have every right to be pissed off with the way that WWE has been working with their network. I mean, they don't even have it yet, correct?
They had it pulled, the rug pulled out from them like an hour before it was supposed to launch.
Yeah, that's the ultimate tease right there.
Yeah, like that is like, here is Christmas. Nah, it's not going to be like, we don't know when it's going to be. Because they didn't even give them a date of like the new, we're really going to release it this time date. They didn't even get that.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Stallone, 1 year younger than Vince McMahon.
Really?
68.
My goodness.
Born
Stallone, you're like a hologram now, buddy.
Born July 6th, 1946.
Man, Rambo was Rambold.
Yeah, it's true. So, my birthday's coming up, and no, Chris Walder, we're not getting into my age on this podcast. I'll just say that.
I really don't know how old you are.
I know. I've never told you, and I never will.
And we're partners on this podcast, and we don't share all this kind of information with each other.
No. Unless I get famous enough that I have you can just Google me, you're never going to know my age.
Well,
that's the price of fame. You can just be Googled.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what it comes down to.
Or Wikipedia. Do you have a Wikipedia?
Yeah, no, I don't have a Wikipedia either. Although Kyle O'Reilly, our guest this week, did have a Wikipedia page.
Should I find his age?
I know his age. It's not an embarrassing number. I think it's like 27. So that's still fairly young.
And he's way ahead of in life than I am. I'm a year younger than him.
Yeah, look at all the titles he's won and awards. And what have you done, Chris Walder? What have you done?
I'll be Lucha Underground champion by the end of the week, buddy.
No, he won't. One thing I did, though, too, I also looked up Bobby Fish, his Wikipedia, when I was doing some research. And the thing I laughed at, they always have, like, former ring names for guys when it's wrestlers. Bobby Fish was once Jerk Jackson. And I saw that, and I'm like, if you know anything about Bobby Fish and how he likes to talk to fans and stuff like that, I'm like, yeah, Jerk Jackson, I can see that.
What the hell is that?
Jerk Jackson. So if we ever have Bobby on the show, we will have to confirm this was actually a ring name.
Mm-hmm.
I should have brought it up with Kyle, but I did not. So
that's a good conversation starter if you ever cross paths with him.
Yeah. So how do you like being Jerk Jackson?
Way to break the ice.
Yeah, he already doesn't like people from Toronto because they stole his ring jacket. So, although I'm from Hamilton, so I can get away with it.
Yeah, you got that going for you.
Yeah, because
Scarborough lads, we're not in the same boat.
No, you steal stuff. Apparently, you people in Toronto stealing ring jackets. That's not good.
But we steal the hearts of the rest of the world in the process.
Anyway, so as far as Vince goes, I don't know what to make of it. I mean, it's obviously been a bad year for Vince McMahon. There's no two ways around that. The WWE Network has been an abject failure to this point. I mean, I don't think it's delivered on anything that the WWE had hoped for, had promised for, had expected. And, you know, to me, when I heard about this Vince McMahon thing, it was like, this was a guy blowing off some steam.
You think so? You think that's just it?
I just think he'd had enough, and, like, so many bad things have been going on, and this crowd wasn't cheering, and he was sitting in the back, and he was just pissed off, and he just decided, screw these people. I'm Vince McMahon, damn it. And that was it.
But at the end of the day, like I said earlier, the Brits have a reason to be upset, and for Vince McMahon to go out there and tell them you're not cheering loud enough, like, I heard of the stories that they were, like, yelling, "Where's my network?" throughout the entire show.
Oh, like, they were. That was in the intro of Raw, too.
Oh, yeah?
I heard it vaguely, but they really tried to sweeten and mess with the volume on that.
One of the beautiful things about taping a show, you can kind of overshadow all of the crappy crowd noise and all the dirty chants they're saying, but they had every right to.
Yeah, but you kind of know, like, when it becomes that generic cheering, and as, I think it was the Wrestling Soup podcast brought this up, you know, when your crowd in the front row is cheering and they're sitting on their hands, it's kind of hard to pipe in that, you know, rabid crowd cheering when you got a guy in the front row that's kind of leaning on his hand like he's bored, like thinking he's going to fail his math test. Not good. You know?
A lot of crowd noise, and everyone in the front row is just like...
Yeah, they're quiet, no signs moving, no nothing, it's just...
Yeah, insanely forced.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, you need the audience to be in on that if you're going to be doing those kind of underhanded tactics and whatnot that the WWE has been inclined to do. By the way, more evidence of maybe my Vince McMahon is frustrated... Because today, people have been told, "You're fired!" by the WWE.
Some of the biggest names in the industry are getting canned, James.
No, they're not actually. Well, technically one of them is.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Technically one of them is, but not in the way that you're thinking, and technically he wasn't fired. The great Khali, apparently, is no more in the WWE. And this is almost one of those mercy killings that I have been begging for on this show for Kane for like 3-4 months now. So I think in some ways I am happy for the great Khali to no longer have to sing happy birthday to people, limp out there and pretend to have a match. I'm happy for Khali. I can't be sad.
I can't wait till you and I have a conversation on this podcast debating whether the great Khali has WWE Hall of Fame credentials.
Oh my god. Do you want to have it now? Because I'll tell you right now, he does not.
I don't think it's going to take long. Hey, he's a former World Heavyweight Champion.
Yeah, so are a lot of people. David Arquette is a former champion. Would you like to put him in the Hall of Fame as well?
He'll be in there soon enough.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure that'll be happening.
The Hall of Fame needs more credibility. I think Arquette provides that.
You don't want to go down that path. You don't want to go down that path, sir. Another name that also is rumored to maybe be on the way out, although he's kind of been out for a while, Brad Maddox, it looks like, may be no longer.
Yeah, it's weird. Didn't he just recently do, like, an online, like, backstage segment? Like, I figured he was going to get back in the spotlight that way.
Yeah, he did a thing on the app, and then it was out of nowhere. He was doing some crazy video on YouTube about a couple months back where he pretended to be trapped in a cave, which was bizarre, but still kind of amusing. And he's been actually Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, we talked a lot about with Kyle. He's shown up at a couple of their shows just as a fan in the audience. So I don't know what's up with Brad Maddox, but he was also moved to the alumni section, the dreaded alumni section. That is how you know a wrestler has been fired in 2014.
Does WWE even care anymore with, like, these releases? Because, I mean, we can't... They confirmed recently that Great Khali was gone, but for someone like Brad Maddox, are they actually going to let it be known to the public, like, on their website, these guys are gone?
Here's the thing, like, it's a perfect opportunity, like, why not use it in storyline? If you're going to fire these people, why not get some bang for your buck out of it? Like,
oh, nice Young Bucks reference
there. I didn't even think about that, but yeah, hire the Young Bucks for all these people you're firing. Get that done, by the way.
You could easily say, like, with the Authority and their upcoming Survivor Series match, they're just, like, super upset, and they're just, like, on a firing spree just to make a point. Because
yeah,
we might not be in power anymore in a couple of weeks. Why not just kind of clean house now?
Exactly. Like, take, for example, and I'm going to pick on him, but he isn't fired yet, but Zack Ryder. If Zack Ryder was to be fired, why can't he just spill a coffee on Hunter and Hunter just go insane? And friggin' fire him on TV. Why not? I mean, just releasing them, like, you might as well get something out of it. Like, that's my point. And I just don't see... Or in the case of Great Khali, because he's such a big, monstrous guy, and they always try and put over the fact that he's this big giant, why not have somebody who you want to push just, like, attack him in the back? They don't even have to have a match and just, like, lay him out.
Well, these guys are gone now. I don't think you can do that anymore.
Well, no, but that's what I'm saying. Like, if you know they're going to be gone, because obviously WWE chose not to renew Khali's contract.
Yeah.
So they knew he was gone. So why not the week before do an angle and have him taken out? Like, that's how you would do it in old school wrestling.
But they don't think that far ahead anymore, James.
Apparently not. Apparently 2 weeks ahead of time is too much for the WWE to grasp these days.
Yeah, it sounds about right. 2 weeks, give or take.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I just don't get it. Like, it really boggles my mind. Like, it's not all that hard. It's not rocket science.
We're not going to weep over any of these releases, though.
No, I get it. And the last time they went through a spree of these, I think we had the same conversation. It's like, I didn't get how people, like, had all this hysteria over certain guys being released. I mean, they weren't being used. I mean, look at some of these guys who have been released. I don't know what they're making out on the indies, but I think for quality of life, I think they're a lot happier. They're actually out there doing their job that they want to do, being a professional wrestler, where a lot of times these guys were sitting home, not booked, not doing anything, only doing house shows occasionally and getting money for that. Like, why not have them be out there and be free to do whatever they want?
Well, Evan Bourne, right? You know, back in ROH is Matt Sydal doing some stuff with PWG on the side. You can also use Curt Hawkins as an example. He's doing PWG as well under the name, it's Brian Myers, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so again, when you leave WWE, it's not a death sentence for your wrestling career. There's always other options, and let's be honest, these guys are probably making a lot more money, and they're definitely being used more. The only release that I was kind of surprised about last time was 3MB, because they were the weekly jobbers on Monday Night Raw. I thought they would always have a role in that regard, but I guess everyone is expendable if you're not making the company money.
They can find other jobbers like Zack Ryder and whoever else is back there. It doesn't matter.
He's not even being used in that regard.
Well, no, he's hurt now, legitimately, right?
But before, though.
Yeah, no, before he wasn't, but legitimately he's hurt now, so he's out indefinitely or 6 months or whatever it is. But yeah, and Matt Sydal, he's obviously been working with ROH too, and we mentioned that in talking with Kyle. He's teaming up with, talk about a tag team. Him and ACH are tagging together in ROH. I don't know if it's going to be a one-time thing for this tag team tournament or if they're going to follow through with it, but talk about two guys that can fly around. I mean, Evan Bourne's most successful tag team run in WWE was obviously with Kofi Kingston. Those two were called Air Boom. I don't know what the heck you call, you know, Matt Sydal and ACH, but, I mean, ACH is a better high flyer in some respects than Kofi Kingston, so that should be an amazing team.
Can we please talk about these vignettes that have been showing up on TV about A New Day? And we just got one with Kofi Kingston, too.
I actually was leading into that, so you're getting how the show works after 30-some-odd episodes.
The master of segues.
Yeah, I was leading that way. What do you think of this? A lot of people are calling it racist. I don't think I'm willing to jump on the racist bandwagon just yet, but it's certainly is a departure from what we originally thought this was going to be, which was some form of Nation of Domination 2.0. It clearly isn't that. Now it seems almost like it's Ernest the Cat Miller meets James Brown meets Johnny B. Badd. I mean, I don't know what the heck to make of this. And now it looks like it's not just going to be Xavier. It is going to be Kofi. And Big E, I imagine, will come as well.
Are they going to be booked as faces or heels? Because I'm pretty sure the WWE Universe is going to turn on this gimmick awfully fast because it's just going to get so overly preachy. They'll probably come to the ring with like an entire choir behind them singing their damn entrance. I like it in the sense that it gives these three guys something to do, and it might put them back in the spotlight just because the tag team division is so barren. They could probably get some sort of run there. But at the same time, it's like, you know, these vignettes, these video packages, they don't really do it for me. I think, you know, am I supposed to get excited for this? I'm excited that they're back on TV, but it's just the entire idea of it just, it doesn't do it for me.
Yeah, and the tag team, though, they're not really a tag team. They're a group of three if Big E becomes part of it. And this is more of WWE trying to cookie cut and copy what they do. I mean, okay, so we had a group of three in the Shield that got over. Oh, and then the Wyatts, they were a group of three. They got over. So now, you know, that's the formula to make stars in 2014, I guess. Just stick any three random guys, put them in a group, and that'll get them over. I mean, I don't know. I just,
well, all three are they all have a lot of charisma, and they can all talk. They just needed the opportunity to. So, but at the end of the day, if these three can't make this work, they might never get another chance again.
Yeah,
it could be the next set of releases.
And the thing is, I think, you know, I don't know about the releases part. I'm not willing to go there because I think the WWE sees value in an Xavier Woods beyond what he does in the ring because of how highly intelligent the guy is and how easily he can fit into all their outreach programs. I think he's got a job for a long time.
Well, what about Kofi? I mean, he's been with the company for a while now.
Him too. I think, you know, a guy who's always been fairly smart and been able to keep his head above water and, you know, came up for a thing for himself. Like, he has a yearly gimmick that they desperately need every year. Kofi Kingston, Royal Rumble, he's got to be there.
Well, you could say the same thing when John Morrison was with the company.
Yeah, like, he's almost, you know, that's actually a pretty good parallel for where he's at. With the exception of Morrison had that significant heel run at the start, Kofi never really was a heel, and I want to see heel Kofi, so I'm pulling for this to end up being a heel faction somehow, because I want to see Kofi as a heel, and I think I want to see Big E Langston as a heel too. I think that would be a better fit for him.
It would be easier for Big E just because of his size. I think Kofi, I don't know if Kofi has it in him, to be honest.
Well, that's the thing I want to see. I want to know. Like, I don't think I know, and I want to know.
They should just put a faction together of all of CM Punk's former friends and his wife and try and get heel heat that way. And then maybe Kofi would have a shot as a bad guy.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he probably could be a bad guy. I mean, he rode on a bus with CM Punk for, what, a year?
Yeah.
Like, Punk doesn't hang out with just anybody, and I think, you know, if you're hanging around with CM Punk, you've got to have a wrestling mind that can work. And I think Kofi's just been... They see him as kind of in the same light that they see a Rey Mysterio. He wears the bright colors. The kids like him. He does all these high flippity moves. So that makes you a babyface. And I don't think Kofi's ever really been given a legitimate shot to be bad. I don't think we know if Kofi can be bad or not.
Do you agree with me, though, that this new group, this new day or whatever, is going to be booked as heels?
I don't know. Like, I think it's one of those acts like Los Matadors, for example, and not the best thing to compare yourself to if you're talking about getting over.
Clearly.
But that came off as so cheesy that you almost expected them to be heels. But yet, they're not. And this kind of has that same kind of feel to me. It's really cheesy. And I think, on the surface, to me, it seems like it's supposed to be bad guys. But maybe they're not. Maybe they really are enlightened people that are good, that want to help us. Like, the other thing that worries me a little bit, too, this is a lot like Bo Dallas, isn't it?
I was about to say that. This is Bo Dallas's gimmick on dope. It really is.
It's kind of, you know, everyone puts the stereotyping on it with the race thing. But this is like the black version of Bo Dallas's gimmick, I think.
Yeah, it really is. I don't know what that means for Bo Dallas, though. It can't mean anything good.
Well, he's injured, too. I mean, that would be something. Like, is that maybe where this goes? Because Bo's out right now, injured. But, I mean, could he come back and like, maybe you have rival factions, like, trying to brainwash people into joining their little cults? Like, is that where we're heading?
It's a new day! Bo leave! It's a new day! Bo leave!
Yeah, love rival chants and everything. And, you know, obviously, Eric Rowan is just wandering around for something to believe in.
Well, he's looking for Renee Young.
He is.
It's going to turn out that he thinks that she's Sister Abigail or something.
No, he just thinks she's pretty.
Oh, you think that's it?
That's what he said.
Oh. Oh, yeah, when he was playing with her hair, right?
That's
back there.
Right.
Oh, my God.
If I was Renee Young, I would run. Get one of those Wyatt t-shirts and take the advice and run.
Just imagine how that meeting would have gone with Vince McMahon. He pulls Rowan and Harper into his room, and he says, look, Luke Harper, I'm going to put you in the main event of Survivor Series as a part of Team Authority. Rowan, I'm going to have you chase around one of our announcers because you have a super crush on her.
So one person is Shawn Michaels, the other is Marty Jannetty, the tag team era standard, pretty much.
Yup.
But, you know, the funny thing is, in talking with Kyle and that, it's nice to see tag teams nowadays where that isn't always the case. Like, I think Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish are equally good competitors, and I think, you know, you get brother tag teams like Nick and Matt and your favorites, the Usos. There's never that Marty, Sean kind of thing, but this certainly feels like that.
You had to say that, didn't you? The Usos. They had to take that jab.
They are the standard of tag teams in the WWE right now, are they not? I mean, Stardust and Goldust are not doing it for me. I apologize to the reigning and defending WWE tag team champions.
Should I just switch my support over to Miz and Mizdow? Like, do I have that option?
You could go with those. Yeah, now they have Midget Miz as well. Oh, is that's not politically correct. I can't say that, I guess.
Little person,
mini Hornswoggle. I don't know. When is Hornswoggle getting on that chopping block?
Like, no, he'll never be fired.
I mean, we got the mini bull, the baby bull. He can pretty much fill in what Hornswoggle does. I don't understand what Hornswoggle's use is in 2014.
How do you ruin a gimmick that's super cool and is getting over with the fans in a big way? You associate Hornswoggle with it.
That's what a lot of people think, isn't it? It's like, once Hornswoggle comes out, and he was Kali, who was released, he was stuck with him. Hornswoggle, if we went through all the people Hornswoggle has been stuck with in the last, like, what, say, 5 years, it would be a long list.
He's like a shrunken head. You just keep passing him down to whoever you want to get released, and he just brings so much bad luck.
Not
that it's
necessarily. I disagree with that, because he actually hung out with DX for a while.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He was hanging with DX. Like, what was that?
That was, like, at the pinnacle of, like, WWE's PG-ness, when they were just being super corny, and they had all these fart jokes and poop jokes, and they thought, oh, we'll put the little guy with D-Generation X. That'll be funny.
Yeah, because, you know, it clearly added to the feud between them and, you know, John Cena, and I don't even remember. I will say, the one thing that was funny in that whole menagerie of things, when Hunter and Sean had to go to Little People's Court, I thought that was absolutely hilarious.
Seriously, dude?
I did. I thought that was amusing.
Ugh. I just channeled my inner Rob Van Dam there. Seriously, dude?
Yeah, like, really?
Old school RVD.
Yeah, yeah. So.
And you're making, like, these subtle wrestling references when you were like, more bang for your buck, and then you just said the menagerie. You've done an ROH reference, you've done TNA. I'm just waiting for you to say, we're going to tombstone the competition here on Condo on the Moon.
Ah, no. Grandpa Taker's done. I think that's clear. tickets have gone on sale for WrestleMania 31, though. They fill up that Levi's stadium, because the product has been so fulfilling. I'm sure that they will have a card that will meet all of wrestling fans' high expectations and standards.
Sting and Hogan inside a steel cage.
Oh, God.
the slowest moving cage match in WWE history.
Oh, that would be terrible. Anyway, there is another thing that got me very upset this week, and I'm trying to bring it up on my screen now, but is there anything else you would like to talk about? We barely talked about Raw. And that's because Raw wasn't really all that great. I mean, Ryback was the star of the show, and good for Ryback, I guess. I mean, they're getting a second bite at the apple with Ryback, which is nice. But, you know, not a lot on this show really caught my attention or really was tickling my fancy, so to speak.
Well, I'll be honest. I didn't actually watch the show. I caught up with spoilers ahead of time, because whenever it's in England, it's never live, so I don't feel the urgency to tune in and sit there for 3 hours when I can just look up quickly. And I do that with Friday Night SmackDown, too. I'm not going to sit there on my Friday nights when I could easily go out. So the only surprise was that wasn't on the spoilers, because it was just a backstage segment, was Luke Harper closing the show, coming in and throwing Dolph Ziggler into the Authority's office and implying that he's going to be a part of Team Authority, which I'm all for. It makes him feel important, which he should be, because he's a tremendous talent. We both love him. But again, it was a Ryback-centric show. It was all about whether he was going to join the Authority, whether he was going to join Team Cena. And although it's not official at this point, all signs do point that it's going to be on Team Cena, and he'll be the fifth guy there.
Yeah, it looks like the big guy is back in the main event and going to be a good guy. A good guy, big guy. So, we'll see if the WWE finds a way to screw this up. Because
that undercard for Survivor Series needs mouth-to-mouth, man, because everyone on the roster is in the main event.
So you're saying Nikki Bella versus AJ Lee as your co-main event is not your cup of tea?
Well, no, it's Ambrose and Wyatt.
No, the second match announced, which would make it the co-main event,
oh, okay.
Was
if
Nikki Bella
sense,
and AJ
yeah.
Lee. But yeah, you're right. The co-main event is probably Wyatt and Ambrose. But yeah, like, those are, like, no joke, those are your top two matches underneath the main event. I mean, there's not much here. And by the way, how did you take that whole beating of Dolph Ziggler? Is that like another Dolph Ziggler push ended or what?
No, it had to be someone on Team Cena getting thrown into the office, and Dolph Ziggler was the logical choice. I don't have a problem with that.
Okay, but will they turn this into an angle? Like, is he still going to be on the team, or are they going to write him off?
No, he'll still be on. He was thrown into the office. I don't think he was taken out.
He was knocked out. He was dead. Stephanie looked at him like he might be dead.
He's wrestling. Spoiler alert, if you watched before the show, he's wrestling on SmackDown.
Well, yeah, that makes sense, actually.
And then
what am I thinking? WWE wrestling actually falling through on a storyline. Who was it? Oh, yeah, when Dean Ambrose was missing. They just never quite said anything. He was just wandering around in somewhere.
Hey, by the way, if you need a reason to tune into Friday Night SmackDown, and if you listen to this after the show, then look it up on YouTube. A match of the year candidate, apparently. People in England were praising this thing as being awesome. Dolph Ziggler defends his IC title in a three-way elimination match against Cesaro, who is just on death row, and then Tyson Kidd, who's really coming into his own now.
Yeah, Tyson Kidd, brought to you by Beats Headphones. Get them at stores everywhere. Seriously,
advertising.
Seriously, like, is Tyson getting some money on the side? If he's not, he should be. Like, come on, Tyson Kidd. You got to pay for that divorce from Natty. Oh, wait, that's not real.
he wouldn't get away with this in the NFL, that's for sure.
That's on the NBA either. UFC even now.
Do they all ban Beats?
No, I'm just saying, like, in general, like, to wear, like, a sponsored item like that?
Yeah.
Oh, that would never fly. Like in the NFL, NBA, you know, like, yeah, it's getting pretty bad. Like, they won't have any of that.
Tyson Kidd, and he's such a big name that you're not going to tell him not to wear it.
That's the thing. Like, that's what you got to do. You kind of, if you're a smart marketing genius here, this is an idea for you people out there. Because I know lots of smart marketing geniuses probably listen to our show. But you don't get the star player. No, you get that next tier down. Because they won't mess with them. And you get them to wear your stuff. And then, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like NASCAR has like 42 cars in a race. No, you don't get the top guys because you can't really afford that. No, just a guy who's in the pack all the time. You know, hopefully he gets in a crash every now and then, because then your sponsorship will get on television, you know, that kind of thing.
You sign Tyson Kidd to a super cheap deal, and then if he ever makes it big and becomes WWE champion, God forbid, you have him, you know, for basically next to nothing, and he's on billboards, posters, commercials.
Oh, no. It's got to be the subtle advertising where he's just wearing the headphones or it won't work.
No, I go big or go home, James.
No, that won't work, though. He won't be able to do that.
This is why I took journalism in school and not marketing.
Apparently. Like WWE does all that subtle stuff all the time. Well, actually, they're not that subtle with it. With
yeah,
the Mountain Dews and the Sonic and the Holy. You know, like, they're always having something at that desk that is sponsor-driven or related. I'm surprised, like, they all have laptops. I'm surprised they don't have, like, a laptop sponsor or, like, iPad or somebody like that sponsoring the show.
Ugh.
Like, you know, what?
Advertising.
Get your $9.99 subscription and you can watch on your iPad. Like, we have the brand new iPad, whatever the hell it is. I don't know because I don't have an iPad. I'm not that technologically advanced yet, but
if they have, like, a food chain or just, like, a fast food joint, everything on the menu will be $9.99 just for the sake of them being able to say $9.99 every chance they get.
I don't know. It's
nine chicken nuggets for $9.99.
It's the WWE network has been just a colossal. It just shocks me how badly this has been done, because the WWE clearly, when it's usually something this important to the WWE, they don't screw it up like this. They just don't. And this time they have in a major way.
And it went down recently too, right? For an hour or so, I heard that somewhere.
I don't know. Like in all honesty, like, with the network being free, that's actually kind of hindered my use of it because of the network being free. I haven't been able to access the WWE network as easily. I'm hoping in December I'll be right back to where I was, but we shall see. But yeah, the only other news of the week, WWE-wise, there was a lot of buzz and controversy over this whole ECW thing that they did after Raw went off the air with Paul Heyman and Joey Styles, and you know, apparently he got into it with Tommy Dreamer on Twitter and all of this. But, I mean, all this ECW stuff, I mean, am I wrong? It was 10, 15 years ago now at this point. Why are we still talking about this?
I'm over it.
Yeah, like,
I really am. I don't care anymore.
Like, if Tommy Dreamer didn't get his money, he's had 10 or 15 years to go get his money. No offense to Tommy Dreamer, but that's just the case. And whether you want to believe Paul Heyman was a saint and actually tried to save people from getting more money than what they would have ended up getting, or he's actually a slime ball and they didn't, it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. It was 15 years ago. To quote Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods, it's a new day. Can we please move on?
If there was ever a guy in the history of professional wrestling that needed to slurp Paul Heyman's ass, like, daily for the rest of their lives, it's probably Tommy Dreamer, because if not for ECW and that brand, Dreamer would have been a nobody, and he has been a nobody every place he's been since then. TNA, his crappy run on the WWE's ECW brand, even though he was champion. But Tommy, for him to go on Twitter and start getting into it with Paul Heyman, that just looks badly on him. And no one is going to ever go against somebody like Paul Heyman with the following he has.
And I mean, Tommy's doing all right for himself. He's running these independent shows like the hardcore. What are they called? I can't think of the name right
hardcore,
now.
Hardcore. It's not Heaven. Is
no.
It hardcore something. I know what you're talking about.
Anyway, people are saying, you dummy, it's this. But anyway, he's running those shows, and I mean, the talent roster that he gets for those shows is off the charts. I mean, anyone who's anyone on the independents usually ends up on those shows. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm sure he's not doing bad for himself if those are making him money. So, I don't know. I just think, you know, like, at some point it's gotta die, you know?
It really does. I'm glad they stopped doing these ECW one-night stand shows and these constant documentaries. We've had really good, you know, three-hour, four-hour, you know, these DVD packages of the history of ECW and these exclusive interviews, but that's, what else are they going to say at this point? I'm surprised they even did this thing out on the network.
Like, WWE has done exactly what WWE does with things. They have taken every bit of ounce of, you know, pop. It's like when John Cena comes out when someone's getting over. That's what WWE did to ECW. They took every little bit of heat, every little bit of sizzle they could get out of it, and then they're just going to toss it away.
Yeah, everything is expendable at the end of the day, right?
It's just content for them. I mean, and it's content that they know people still to this day love, so they get their most out of it. I mean, they could do the same thing with WCW. Because to this point, I don't think they've even come close to milking what they could get out of WCW.
Oh, very much so, yeah. That's why I love these Monday Night War things with Nitro. But again, that's just the tip of the iceberg of some of the stuff World Championship Wrestling did.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens going forward with the network, because I think they're in a lot of trouble, and we will see how they dig themselves out. Because, I mean, they are going to dig themselves out.
Well, I'm looking forward to getting WrestleMania for less than $10. Well, not less than $10, a little over $10, but still, I'm amazed that they're going to go ahead with this. Well, you can subscribe for 1 month, and then you can just can it at the end of the period or whatever.
It could end up being the greatest thing in the world for wrestling fans, because they are going to have to actually put up or shut up when it comes to their pay-per-views at some point, because the numbers are going to dictate that they're going to have to.
I see your point.
But, you know, that said, it's also going to mean Brock Lesnar isn't coming back. Like if anyone thinks Brock Lesnar is doing an extra date between now and WrestleMania, you're nuts. It ain't happening.
Well, he's done after WrestleMania, too.
Oh, that, too. Like, that's a given, too. Like, Brock Lesnar isn't coming back. And Brock Lesnar isn't doing any extra dates because, quite frankly, where is the money and revenue to justify it? There isn't. Like, it's just not there. There's no there.
He'll compete at either TLC or Royal Rumble. He'll beat John Cena, I would think. And then you won't see him again until WrestleMania, when he probably drops the belt to Reigns, and then that's it, because they can't afford him anymore.
Yeah, I think that's on the money, because Brock has got a pretty sweet deal by all accounts from what people say, and WWE just can't be doling out that kind of money for part-time talent, like and real part-time talent. Like Brock, I think, almost needs his own level of part-time. I mean, there's Chris Jericho part-time, where he's literally part of the company for 3 months, and then he leaves. Then there's Brock Lesnar part-time, where he shows up once every 3 months, and then he's there for a few weeks and gone. I mean, there's different levels of this part-time thing in the WWE.
And then to rub it into all the full-time superstars, when the Slammy Awards start rolling through, when Brock Lesnar went Superstar of the Year.
I don't think that's happening.
You don't think so?
And fan voting? I won't be... Well,
it's
I'm
like
trying
fan
to
voting
think.
Matters. These things are predetermined, James.
Wait... No, you think the WWE wanted Daniel Bryan to win?
Oh my, well, they wouldn't have been able to get away with anything else in Seattle.
Yeah, but do you think that's what they wanted? Probably not.
No, but I think they realized that if they had not given it to him, it wouldn't have made a lick of sense. If they say it's fan voting, sure, they're going to take into account what the fans are saying, but at the same time, they're going to give it to who they want to give it to, and it was Daniel Bryan.
Okay, but we're not at Slammy time yet. We'll save the Slammy debates for another day.
Like, it really matters who wins that damn trophy.
It does matter. Owen Hart was a two-time Slammy Award winner.
If you beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania and don't win Superstar of the Year, you are in a world of trouble.
All I'm saying is the person who got the most out of the Slammies was clearly Owen Hart.
Only Owen Hart. That's it.
Probably true. Like, the only guy who really just took that gimmick and made the most out of it.
Is he the only guy who actually carried the trophies to the ring? I can't think of anybody
else. I think
else.
Other guys have for like a week or something, but consistently for like a year?
Yeah,
that's only one guy, Owen Hart. And God bless him. And
rest
of course...
Peace, yeah.
Of course, another sad remembers this week. It was 9 years ago. Eddie Guerrero passed away this past week, so that is sad news. But
I saw a tweet from I have some buddies over at Wrestle Reaction, and they posted a photo of Eddie Guerrero. You know, long live Guerrero, rest in peace, and whatnot. And one of the first comments underneath the photo was, "He's dead." I thought WWE just released him.
Wow!
I was blown away.
That's someone trolling or someone who's just like...
It was a young woman.
Mean. That's mean. Maybe she's getting confused with Chavo. I don't know.
Maybe.
But that's just not right. But that said, you know, Eddie's a sad story in the sense of Eddie, from all accounts, was a guy who cleaned up his life. And let's make no bones about it. Did some terrible things for long periods of time. But had gotten himself on the right path and then unfortunately passed away and you know, really was a kind of at the peak of his profession at the time that he actually passed away.
But he did find redemption, and I think that matters, even though it was probably too little too late. The damage had been done at that point. But to end his life, getting his WWE Championship reign, being able to mend the fences that he did with the people that he affected, it's a good story, and it's a sign for everyone else that there's always a chance, and there's always a way to come back from the darkest of places.
And wrestling-wise, we all got cheated out of what I'm sure would have been one of the classic WrestleMania matches of all time, because the talk was we were going to get Shawn Michaels versus Eddie Guerrero at the WrestleMania before... He ended up passing away, so what a match that would have been.
One of the greatest matches that never, ever happened, and disappointing, but...
Absolutely.
What can you do?
Yeah, so is there anything else wrestling-wise you wanted to talk about? Because I have one last thing that I want to rant about on this show, and then that'll be it for us.
Go for it, buddy.
Well, no, is there anything else you want to talk about that?
It's been a slow week in wrestling. My brain is just infused with Raptors this and Raptors that, and with the taped show on Raw this week, it's been very slow in the Walder household with all WWE news. All
righty. Well, we should have our TNA minute. Dixie Carter, once again, has promised there will be a television deal put in place, and she's told that to wrestlers, and should happen next week. We've heard this all before, so... We'll wait and see if that actually materializes. There was your TNA minute, and it probably wasn't even a minute.
That was like 6 seconds.
I got it all done. I'm quick. I'm fast. What can you say?
Just quickly, what network do you think it is? Because I think it's just Spike. I think Spike.
I don't think it's anything. I think Dixie's like blowing smoke up her outer mouth or outer butt or whatever. She said this like 4 times.
Well, that's not good.
When do we get to the point that the little boy is crying wolf, or in this case, the little girl, or whatever Dixie is?
The idiot girl.
You said it. What was that song, Stupid Girl? Who sang that?
Is that another old song that I wouldn't have been old?
Apparently, I didn't think it was that old, but apparently Stupid Girl is out of Chris Walder's wheelhouse. Hopefully out there someone remembers Stupid Girl. It was a popular song.
Stupid Girl. Was it a rock song?
It was, kind of, yeah.
I know a song called Stupid Girl by a band named Cold.
Okay, it might have been like
a remake.
It was
actually a theme. Yeah, it was a theme for like a wrestling pay-per-view once, and it's actually on my iPod. I might have to play it one of these days.
There you go. Anyway, Chris Walder with the music minute that lasted longer than the TNA minute.
The TNA minute, yeah.
All right. Anyway, what I am upset about involves some people from TNA. Some female people from TNA, and some female people from all around the wrestling world. A couple weeks ago, we had Adam Cole on. We talked about the PWI 500, of which Adam Cole was, number 9?
Yeah, he was in the top 10 somewhere,
He was doing well. Kyle O'Reilly, who was our guest this week, he was number 61, just for reference sake, and congratulations to Kyle, making the top 100. Not easy with the women, not as many people to go around, so they do a top 50 women's wrestlers. Now, we'll go through the top 10. I am not necessarily upset about anything to do with the top 10. We'll get to what I'm upset about after we read the top 10 for you. The top 10 starts with Charlotte Flair. No complaints there. Charlotte Flair has had an amazing year and is getting better and better and better. And I think at some point we'll top this list probably. Right, Chris Walder?
Agreed.
After her, Natalya. She is in there at number 9. Last year, she was number 13, by the way. Last year, Charlotte Flair was not ranked, if you were wondering, because she wasn't really on TV much. Anyway, Natalya, I mean, it is what it is with Natalya. She's a great wrestler. I don't think much of anything else to do with Natalya, including her role on Total Divas, and basically any time she opens her mouth.
You know who Natalya reminds me of, just based on the kind of path her career has taken? Jacqueline. Someone who was a really good wrestler, but was never able to kind of break through as the face of the division.
Wow. So there you go, Chris Walder, dropping some knowledge on us. Okay, a couple independent ladies who I am not familiar with, but Courtney Rush comes in at number 8. Last year she was number 23, so she's moving up in the world. And Ivelisse Velez is number 7. She was not ranked last year, so there you go.
The former Tough Enough contestant.
Oh, is she? Okay, yep. There you go. So then we get TNA's Angelina Love. She was not ranked last year because I don't think she was wrestling last year.
She was on and off for a majority of the year, yeah.
Pretty much. Lefisto, independent wrestler. I have heard of her. I hear good things. She was ranked number 21 last year, coming in number 5 this year. Cheerleader Melissa, she last year topped this list, and now you can catch her at number 4 on this year's list, and you can catch her on one of my favorite podcasts over there on MLW, the guys from Japan, Talkin' Shop. She is their female consultant on that show, so you can hear Cheerleader Melissa occasionally with those drunken guys in Japan. Yeah.
You got to exercise the drunkenness.
Well, Carl Anderson, I love the show. I'm sure he knows. And if you have not heard Luke Gallows on that show, you clearly are missing out on something in life, because Luke Gallows is just absolutely hilarious.
I have not actually listened to that show. Is it
you
just
need
Gallows
to.
And Carl?
It's Carl Anderson. Rocky Romero produces the show, but he never really talks all that much. He's usually just doing the audio and running things. Occasionally he'll chime in. Every once in a while, the big LG, Luke Gallows, rolls into the show, and my God, when he is on an episode, it is just total hilarity. He does Howard Finkel impressions. He does all kinds of crazy stuff, and it's just, it's hard for anyone else who's on the show, if you're looking like for who they're interviewing and Luke Gallows is on, warning, the people that you came to listen to, you're probably going to hear Luke Gallows for half the time you expected to hear the guests. That said, you'll still laugh.
Well, that's on my to-do list now.
There you go. Talking Shop comes out Saturdays on MLW from somewhere in Japan or around the world. And back to our female top 10 list here for the Pro Wrestling Illustrated. Gail Kim comes in at number 3. I almost feel that Gail is slighted at that number. Even though she's in TNA, she is clearly the best female wrestler on the planet today, I think, in a lot of ways. Last year she was number 6, so she's actually moved up on the list. But
well, who's the top 2?
Well, we're going to get there.
I'm impatient, damn it.
Wow. Okay, Mrs. CM Punk, AJ Lee, comes in at number 2. Last year she was number 9, so she is climbing her way up the list. And at number 1, Paige from the WWE is your top female wrestler on the planet Earth, according to PWI.
So you're saying that you would rank Gail Kim ahead of either Paige or AJ?
I'd think about it.
I'd be hard-pressed to find a reason to do that.
I mean, yeah, I get it. Gail Kim works for the other guys, and the competition that she faces isn't always the greatest, but, I mean, she is still one of the top-notch wrestlers in the business today. It's a shame she never could work out in the WWE, really, because, I mean, I think she's a phenomenal talent and, you know, really can go in the ring.
And my math teacher at Woburn CI in Scarborough taught her for 4 years.
There you go. She is a Canadian as well, yeah. We were talking about, we like to promote our Canadians with Kyle O'Reilly. Gail Kim, the top Canadian on the list at number 3.
I wore a wrestling t-shirt to class one day, and he pulled me to the front of the class, and he's like, "Do you know of this girl, Gail Kim?" Like, yeah, she's a ref. I'm like, oh, for a couple of years, you know, and I hear she still does this. Do you know of her? Like, do you watch her? And I'm like, yeah, that's a good story. Actually, another interesting fact, that same guy, the same math teacher, is the brother-in-law to Paul Jones, one of the Raptors announcers.
Oh, cool. Paul Jones from the Raptors, he used to be like a vice principal or a principal.
Yeah,
Jonesy was in the education system, but our wrestling fans are like, who the hell is Paul Jones? but that said, so this top 10, I don't really have a problem with it. Do you? I mean, it seems fairly good.
It's fair, but I know what you're about to say with your grievances. So
that's right, because
that.
This is, as we said, a top 50 list. Okay. Here we go with my problem with this list. Let's see. We get down to, number 16. Brie Bella is number 16 on this list. Oh, really? That's interesting. I would have some problems with that. In fact, how is she worse than Nikki? Just in that alone. Explain that one to me. Because Nikki Bella, to me, is the better wrestler, is the better talker, is more over than her sister. So even on that, I have a problem.
Well, Nikki Bella has only come on recently. Like, this hasn't been a year-long thing where Nikki was just so far ahead of Brie.
Fine. Whatever. I still have a problem. I still have a problem. But as much as a problem as I have with that, it does not even come close to the problem I have with number 17 on our list. This female wrestler accomplished pinning someone on their stomach instead of their back this year. If you don't know who I'm talking about, it is Cameron, one half of the Funkadactyls, who, by the way, is ahead of Naomi on this list, who checks in. In fact, so far low down, I have to scroll on my computer and find it, but it's somewhere in the 30s. That Naomi is in here. I can't find her. 39. Naomi is 39.
Let's just hope that maybe PWI just screwed the names up. Maybe Naomi was supposed to be where Cameron is.
So to review, here are some of the WWE wrestlers, and we're not even talking the independent wrestlers at this stage, but we will. We have Bayley is ahead of Naomi. Maybe. I could make the argument there. I'm okay with that. Nikki Bella? No. Your girl Alicia Fox was 25. Apparently you did not hype her up enough to get her in the top 20. What's with that, Walder?
Sorry, girl.
She is up 10 from last year, though. She was 35, so there you go.
She can work, though.
Canadian girl, independent wrestler Cherry Bomb is in at 26, by the way. Another Toronto native at some point. Trained by a Canadian, Emma comes in at 29 from the WWE. And that's all the WWE people ahead of Naomi. But
can I make the joke that that Emma stole Naomi's spot on the list?
You could.
All right, so I did.
Yeah, there you go. Naomi barely ahead of Becky Lynch on this list. You mentioned about what have you done recently? Becky Lynch is two behind Naomi, so explain that then.
Becky Lynch.
At the point, Becky Lynch had not even turned heel at this point. She was doing that terrible Irish gimmick that looked like Sheamus.
How long has she been around for? She hasn't been around for a cup of coffee, and she's only two spots behind Naomi.
That's right. You know, one ahead of Veda Scott, who is a very accomplished independent female wrestler, which I don't understand. Oh, by the way, other notable names that Cameron is better than, according to this list. Candice LeRae, who, by the way, took a friggin' thumbtack super kick and bled all over the place at PWG, not as good as Cameron.
That's enough to get her into the top 10, in my opinion.
To me, that's instant top 5. Forget about top 10. I don't care what else Candice LeRae did this year.
She's one of the few ladies that holds her own very well with the men, and she couldn't get ahead of Cameron, who doesn't know how to pin somebody properly.
And I will tell you something. I'm going to give a free plug for Candice. She is going to be in the Toronto area in Mississauga for Smash Wrestling November 23rd, which is my birthday, by the way. She will be in town at Smash Wrestling in Mississauga. So look up at Smash Wrestling on Twitter for all the details on that. But her and Joey Ryan will be in tag team action, so I feel I've righted this wrong a little bit for Candice LeRae by giving her a free plug on the podcast.
That is someone we need to get on the podcast. Now, that would be quite the interesting interview.
I would like to know, too, yeah. Because, boy, oh boy, you know, that is a girl who balls to the wall. I'd love to see her in WWE, but I don't know if it'll ever happen because with all her fighting with guys, which obviously isn't going to happen in WWE, and just be, but she's an attractive girl too, and I mean, I think she could fit in fine.
Yeah,
it's one of.
But I think her big calling card is the fact that she can wrestle the guys, and I think that kind of makes her unique. And she wouldn't be able to get away with that in WWE.
So. Yeah, and another person who fits that category, who's had a tough 2014 in the sense of her situation with crossing the border, but Sleazy Spark's not even on this list. And she has quite the following in the States, and it's not like she just wrestled here. I mean, she was going down the States wrestling quite a bit, and not even on this top list. And again, not better than Cameron. Really?
I'd love to know who made this list. Is there a name attached to this thing?
Well, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, the same people that made the list with Adam Cole and, you know, Kyle O'Reilly and all that, and they usually do a decent job with the men's one. I don't know what the hell happened here. Like, I don't know what blind people are making this list.
Hey, Jimmy and Jey Uso at number 25 and 26, my boys.
What do you mean? They're not on this list. They're not
on the
women.
PW on the top 500, not the women's list.
Okay, well, there you go.
Did I really have to make that clear? Jimmy and Jey Uso are not on the Divas list?
Well, we're talking about the women's list, and then you just randomly brought up the Usos.
It's only because I looked at the top 500 list before we went on the air, and I noticed 25.
Okay.
I wanted to see the number of the person that's on my birthday, which is the 26th.
Oh.
So I was like, oh, it's Jimmy Uso, who's right behind Jey Uso. How did they decide who gets to go ahead? But
wait, so your birthday is this month, too?
No, it's on a 26th.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say, that would be like a hell of an episode we'll have the week of both of our birthdays. That would be
birthday bash on the moon.
Yeah, it would be great, but apparently not. Oh, well.
Just space girls everywhere.
Yeah, but I'm baffled by this list. I just don't get it. I like, I don't understand. Like, is it that they just don't care about women's wrestling enough to, like, do any form of research or what? But it's just, you know, and granted, I'll be the first to admit, there's a lot of names on this list that I don't know that are independent wrestlers, but I'm not the one claiming to be putting out a top 50 list of women wrestlers either. That's Pro Wrestling Illustrated.
It is what it is. It could just be a matter of preference. Maybe they just conjured up the top 10 and they were just pulling names out of a hat to fill out the rest of the list because they're like, well, these lists aren't going to get leaked anyway. People are just going to start reporting on the top 10. So we'll just, you know, one at a time, we'll pull them out and see what happens.
Cameron 17.
Cameron, come on.
The girl can't even wrestle.
Even Cameron looked at that number and was like, oh, hell no.
Oh, no, she didn't. No, you see, that's the worst part of this. I think when Cameron hears about this, she will think, I'm doing good.
Ego boost.
Yeah, they've noticed all that time I put in back in NXT.
Oh, God. Well, it's easy to impress people when you're in the ring for, like, a move and a half. You do an arm drag and then you tag out. If you can pull an arm drag off technically savvy, it's maybe you can impress Dave Meltzer. Who knows?
I will say to this whole thing, girl, bye. Yeah. No,
really?
Actually, one last thing. At least Eva Marie was not on this list.
Oh, we have that going for us.
If she was on this list, I would have just lost all hope for humanity.
But Cameron brings it down a notch, though.
Oh, down a notch? She brings it down a ton.
I think Cameron is worse than Eva Marie.
I think they're both terrible, yeah. Like, I mean, I list them in the... If you were going to do the worst wrestlers female going today, I think that is a tough race for number one.
I'd give it to Cameron, though. I would. Eva Marie doesn't bother me nearly as much as Cameron does, because at least Eva Marie isn't pinning people when they're on their stomachs.
That's true. That might be the tiebreaker right there.
Yeah, that's all I need to say. That's my that's my saying court.
That might get enough judges swayed of, yeah, you know what? No one's really done that. Kelly never did that.
Exactly.
I mean, and actually, you know, I think that's the thing with it. You know, female wrestlers, my kind of model is Trish Stratus. Trish Stratus came in, lovely girl, obviously there primarily because of her looks, but learned the craft of wrestling, and by the end of it, Trish Stratus was a pretty damn good wrestler. And it's just like, the girls nowadays that get in on just their looks, I just don't buy it that they're trying to get better.
Well, it's because they don't have the same work ethic, A, and then B, the Divas division isn't being pushed as nearly as high as it used to be when it was so deep. And we've said this numerous times. I mean, the era that we liked with, you know, the Stratuses, the Litas, the Molly Hollies, Jacqueline's, Gail Kim's and whatnot, and Victoria's, you know, that was like the pinnacle of the Divas division. But now, it's basically a two-woman race with Paige and AJ Lee, and everyone else is just kind of being thrown in as filler, you know, from the Total Divas cast, and then that's it. I mean, it's not going to be anything special until we see some of these girls that we really like in NXT coming up, like Charlotte Flair, like Bayley, like Sasha Banks. Then we might have something. We might have something, but until then...
Like number 41 on the list, Becky Lynch.
Becky, we need the Irish lad. We need to bring her up with her dance moves and her river dance or whatever.
No, I think she lost that when she went heel. At least I hope she has.
No more river dance?
No more river dance. So,
what's the point of this? What are we doing here?
Well, unless she's Sheamus' sister, I never saw the point in that.
The one heel turn that was completely unnecessary.
Oh, it was very necessary.
Why?
Because that gimmick sucked. But anyway, the point being, I kind of disagree with you in the sense, I think the women are pushed more because of Total Divas than they were back in the day. Like, Trish Stratus and Lita had to fight their way up the card, scratching, clawing, getting their way to the point where they were doing main events. Nikki Bella, because of who she was facing, or sorry, Brie Bella, because of who she was facing, was handed main event after main event on Raw and did nothing with it.
Right, but what I'm saying is I think Total Divas the show comes before any like storyline that they're going to push on television. So there's a difference between, you know, getting title shots for the Divas Championship because of your talent and because you're getting over with the fans, or because WWE says Total Divas is getting over on the E! Network, we want someone, the face of that show, to be the face of the Divas division as well. So that's why I wouldn't honestly be surprised if Nikki Bella beats AJ and becomes champion.
I don't know.
Unless
but,
that rule is still in place, right?
Where well, the rule is kind of hanging out there, but now that Paige is entering the fray on Total Divas, I tend to wonder what the rule will be going forward, because, I mean, God, what's the women's division now? Like minus like Total Divas, there's like hardly anyone, right?
And then if AJ gets on Total Divas, they're going to put the belt on Stephanie McMahon.
AJ is never going on Total Divas.
No, I know. Okay.
Because you know why AJ is never going on Total Divas?
Do tell.
There's this guy named Phil Brooks. He got a job with Marvel Comics. And how would AJ be on the show without him, or at least explaining her marriage to him?
Oh, yeah, that's an excellent point. I never actually thought of that.
Yeah, that CM Punk guy, he's still around.
That's why you're the brains of this operation, James.
He's making the comics, he's happy, loving life, and I'm sure he's proud that his wife was ranked number 2. Not yet the best wrestler in the world as a woman, but right on the cusp.
Well, Paige had a better year.
It's debatable. I mean, I think you could flip a coin between those two, and I would be okay with it either way, but the Cameron thing makes the whole list totally irrelevant. And
it'll get better, James. It'll be better.
We probably went like about 20 minutes long ranting about that. It might have even been longer. I didn't even have the time up to watch it, but I feel better now having get that off my chest. So that's the main thing. That I feel better, Chris Walder, and I feel like I have stood up for all women that can wrestle and were just horribly damaged by this list.
Bless your heart, sir.
Indeed. But no, the heck with my heart and blessing my heart. Bless the heart of Kyle O'Reilly, who was our guest and a good one. And thanks go out to ROH, who is helping us line up all these great guests. As they head towards final battle, we've really had a good working relationship with them, and hopefully that's going to continue as we march down this road to final battle. And don't have names for you yet of who might be here next week, but we do have some things in the fire, so the road continues. And as always, pay attention to @condoonthemoon on Twitter, and when we can let you know who's coming, we will.
The cream of the crop. Nobody does it better.
More questions.
I'm sorry about that.
Goodbye.